My name's Chuck and I'm an addict.
Hi, Chuck.
And I get the honor and the privilege to introduce our speakers tonight. And so our first speaker, and I actually had the honor of doing kind of a similar panel like this a while back, and it was a lot of fun. And so it's going to be very very interesting and very rewarding to hear these three again. So the first speaker will be Mary Jane.
That's you. You know how to turn the button on? I know you're not very smart. You have to push the button up.
Is that it?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
You're a lot smarter now than you used to be.
I'm getting there. No. Hi, I'm Mary Jane, and I'm an addict. Working? I can talk loud.
Well, stand up and talk. Start to use the mic.
It's cute.
Yeah, it's cute. How cute, huh? I'm Mary Jane, and I'm an addict and an alcoholic. And I say that because a lot of my pain is dying by going to those other meetings. And I give credit where credit's due. I came to the program in 1963. And when I came in, there were three women in the meeting. And a lot of you women were there last night. You heard me. So if I bore you, just go on out the door. When I came in, we were a very small fellowship, and in those days, you could go to jail for association. And when I first went to my first meeting, I went to drop off my ex-husband, my third ex-husband, because he had a heroin problem, and I knew I was crazy, and I was just going to go on up to the local state nut ward. And I heard things in that first meeting. People let people talk. And I wasn't so out of it that I didn't know that maybe other people didn't agree with them, but they gave them the courtesy and the respect. And I'd never known that before. And I said, I want to be a part of this. And they said, if you have any drugs on you, please go dump them in the toilet. And I was a Benzedrine addict. I used Benzedrine. And in those days, you didn't know you got high on Benzedrine. I mean, that wasn't even part of my vocabulary. I took them so I could work 20 hours a day, and I could talk. I didn't know how to talk to people. And I was a hairdresser, and all these sophisticated ladies, and I didn't know how to talk to them, but if you got me a couple of bennies, I could work all night and all day and talk up a storm, and I could make lots of money because money was my first addiction at that point. Besides the Benzedrine. We had one meeting on Friday night, and that's where we all were. And shortly after that, we started branching out. Myself and another woman named Netta opened up a meeting in Glendale. And before that, though, they had, I was about 3 months clean, I think. It was my memory's real getting a little different now. But they'd asked me to take over this meeting on Sunday afternoon. And I was so thrilled that they trusted me and that they'd given me the responsibility. Oh, my gosh. That was it. Well, this meeting was in a hotel that housed alcoholics. And I'd go sit in the big lobby with my little Seventh Tradition and the coffee pot going. And I'd have some winos on one couch and some whiskey heads on the other couch. And I sat. And slowly people started coming in. Addicts started coming in. And it got to be a fairly good-sized meeting after a few months. But the tradition, some of the traditions started coming in at like 10 cents in pennies. And eventually we were able to pay our rent even at that time. And I'd made a lot of mistakes in N.A. I've done a lot of things, you know, that should not have given me the privilege of getting here. And the only way I can justify it in my mind as to why I've been blessed to sit at this table is that God loved me, and I loved N.A., and I was always willing to do whatever needed to be done. I never said no. We didn't have styrofoam in those days, so at the end of the meeting, you sit in the kitchen And you really got to know people because you had to wash the cups and all of that. We started eventually going to institutions. I've never been in jail. I've never been in a penitentiary. But I had an empathy for people locked up. I think probably because I'd been locked up inside for so long. And I was eager to get involved in that. We had a hotline, and people would call in the middle of the night, and I'd answer the phone, and I'd say, "Hi, this is Mary Jane," and some poor addict on the other end would just go ballistic, you know, and all of that. But if you are an addict and you really want to do anything, go do a 12-step call at 3 o'clock in the morning on somebody, and then get up and go to work the next day. Take somebody home and stay up all night rubbing their back while they kick, helping them take a hot shower or a bath, and then take them to somebody else in the morning who wasn't working and go to work the next day. We didn't have the privilege, or whatever you want to call it, of go picking somebody up and dropping them off at a recovery house. We 12-stepped our addicts, and I wouldn't have made it if these two hadn't, and several others, hadn't have been at that first meeting I went to. They carried me. They tolerated me. I didn't identify with anybody in there. Everybody in there had been to the penitentiary but me. It seemed like this one other lady who was a housewife dope fiend, and I wasn't one of those. And I got with a guy in the program who had been around since the very beginning, and we started living together, and with my keen intellect, he drove a Cadillac and wore a suit, so I knew he had to be okay. After about 2 years, he came in one day, and he says, "I'm going to get loaded, and if you love me, you'll go with me." And I'd never used heroin, and I had 2 years clean. And I went with him. I sat there while he went, the cop, saying, "I should get out of here. This is when you call somebody." But I couldn't do it. I wanted to be a member, and for some distorted reason in my mind, a benzodrine habit just didn't qualify me. I just couldn't get that one. You know, so I went out and got my first heroin habit after 2 years of being clean. And that was an interesting experience. But we had a lot of fun. And what I miss, I think, the most, I don't know about anybody else, but I miss all of us loaded up in the car driving 50 miles to help somebody start a new meeting. It doesn't seem to happen anymore. You know, and it wasn't just loading up the car with people. We'd load up the car with the entire fellowship. Jimmy Kennan was always there. Jimmy Kennan was a role model. He was a kind, gentle father that I never had. I'm sorry.
Okay, you're next, Sylvia.
Yeah, you're Sylvia. I never had a father that was kind. And Jimmy was kind to me. And I really appreciated that. Really appreciate it. And I miss it. But that's okay. He did what he needed to do, and thank God for Jimmy, because none of us would probably be here. Maybe we'd be someplace else, but we might not be here if it hadn't been for him and his diligent effort and everything else that he put forward. He was NA, you know. You could count on Jimmy. He was there. We had fun. I know the first year I was there, I was the Pearl Nesta. For those of you that are too young, she was quite a party giver in Washington, D.C. And so I decided, oh, nobody's got anywhere to go for Thanksgiving. So I made a big Thanksgiving dinner. And I had the whole entire population of Narcotics Anonymous and their kids in my two-bedroom apartment for dinner. And it was fun. It was fun. We had fun. We fought. You know, we didn't speak to each other sometimes. But we always hung in there, for the primary purpose was the addict that still suffered. We put our own personal agendas aside for the addict that still suffered. I got into the institutional work. I worked the hotline. At one point, I was the secretary, and my boyfriend, Paul, at that time, was the, what was he, the president? Or what did they call him?
The president.
President? He was the president, I was the secretary. And that was, you know, we were, you know, we were there, but we didn't do anything, you know, really. I don't know that we contributed that much, either one of us. But we filled those slots. And I learned a lot from Paul. I have to give Paul credit. He's dead now. And he taught me a lot about the traditions, that they went hand in hand with the steps, that they belong together. You can't separate them. And that the program without either one of them wouldn't be the program. And I appreciate that. I went out with Paul and came back, and being such keen intellect, I married a guy that had, what, he had 2 years clean or 3 years clean, and I thought, well, this will help. You know, this will be good. And I ended up marrying a batterer, and he had took me from one end of the San Fernando Valley to the other, and he didn't want me going to MA and wouldn't let me go. And being one of those women that grew up in an era where you follow your man no matter what, I followed him, and I ended up isolated and battered, and I was ashamed. I wouldn't go out with my eyes swelled shut. I wouldn't call anybody and tell them what was going on. I thought I had to take it, and it was, why did I do it? What did I do to cause this? And today I see I didn't do anything to cause that. That was his nature. That was his nature. I had one child when I came to the program that was six months old, and I had another baby at two years clean, married to this next guy, that guy, the batterer. And both of my children, I have to share this with you that are young, that have children. Both of my children are living sober, clean, spiritual lives. I haven't had problems with them other than what anybody else would have, nothing, you know, life-shattering problems. And I give back to the program. My daughter did try. She went to live with her heroin-addicted father, the one that I come to the program with, who's still using. And she got into doing crystal meth. And I asked her a few years ago, why did you stop? And she said, I realized I liked it too much. She wouldn't have had that information if she hadn't have gone to meetings. And my son was telling somebody a few weeks ago, yeah, my mom used to make us write about it all the time. And he was writing about it when all he could do was draw pictures, you know. My kids are the fruition of my being in this program. They're my shining thing. I'm very emotional tonight. I don't know why. Because I'm a tough old broad. You know that.
Yeah. Huh? What happened to you?
I don't know. I just turned into a wimp. Yeah.
That's what happens when you get old, man.
I guess. Kicking, Sylvia. Sylvia, you knock him down and then I'll kick him. Oh, good. I don't know. I thought of so many things. What am I going to say there? What am I going to say there? And now it's all gone out the window. You know, but I love this program. I can't begin to tell you how much I love it. And for those of you that are young, if you stay clean and you really have a love for this program and a belief in a higher power, you too will be here with wrinkles on your face in a few years. It can happen. I personally didn't do anything that my grandmother, who died at 92 and never took drugs, didn't do. Not taking drugs is no, you know, big ribbon I want to wear. I did that. That was something I wasn't supposed to do. I shouldn't have done that. And by the grace of God, I'm here, relatively sane. It hasn't always been good. I had two suicide attempts, clean and sober, and was clinically dead on the last one. It's been painful. And the last suicide attempt came, I'd been in an emotional and mental breakdown, and I'd been going to a psychiatrist, and he'd been giving me medication, and I'd been saving. I didn't take it. I didn't want to get loaded. I had no desire to get loaded. And I saved it, and I was conversing with my mother one day, and she told me I hadn't suffered enough. And that was the straw that snapped it up here for me. I couldn't hold on anymore. And I was clinically dead when they finally found me. But I'm here. And it was a blessing. I came out of it with a lot more knowledge than I had going in a lot better shape than I was going in, and for a long time before that happened. Don't go out and do it, though, because that worked for me. I'm not saying that. But it's not all been nice and sunshine and lollipops. There's been pain. There's been loss. But there's really been more joy when you weigh them both out. You know, I don't think I'd change anything. Because the blessings have been so great. NA in the beginning, I went to my first meeting and we drove around the block to see if the police were sitting out there. We had two narcs in the valley called Lestelle and Mullins. Mm-hmm. And we were terrified they were sitting out there. Because remember, my husband was a junkie. I knew nothing about heroin at that time. But I knew he could go to jail. And I share this how dumb I was about heroin. I went to do the laundry one day and found his socks and his shoe. And I pulled them out. There was about 20, 30 balloons in there. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize he was dealing. I just assumed it was personal stash. No junkie has 30 balloons of heroin as personal stash sitting around. You know, not if they were like I was when I got out there. And he's still out there, so I don't think he really had those for personal use. But God bless him. He's a good man. He's a good man. He wasn't a bad man. What else should I tell him?
You didn't want to tell him everything, Mary Jane.
No?
No. They might call the police. Nashville, they're pretty tough.
I'd get run out of Nashville? But anyhow, and I ended up, I got clean after that run, stayed clean for a while, and then ended up divorcing that guy. I went to San Jose. Bill B. took me to San Jose along with another gal, and we set up the first residential 12-step recovery house that I know of in California at that time. And we were under surveillance. They'd drive by. We had all these women and men in this place, and they just knew it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on in there. And they'd drive around and everything. And that was fun. You know, we did something, it lasted, and it was fun. We were up there, and I met this guy, and oh, I thought this was wonderful, and somebody told us, oh, you two will never get married. Well, we went and got married the next weekend, just to show him. Being such a keen intellectual person, he was on methadone, and I figured that, well, I should go on methadone with him. So clean and sober, I went on methadone. I bought a bag, and I divided it up in three piles, and I'd get up every morning and fix and go down and test dirty, because I'm a very smart person. Yeah. And about a year and a half later, he ran off with another man, and I decided that I needed to get clean. And so I went into detox, and I cleaned up, and I had a spiritual awakening 6 weeks after I got out of detox. I started getting pains, and I went to the doctor, and they said I had cervical cancer, and that it would have been inoperable in about a few more months. And they said, we need to operate yesterday, and I said, I need to go home. I went home, and I prayed, and I meditated, I wrote letters, and got in touch with God, made peace, and told him, if this is it, it's okay. I'd like to see my kids raised. They were still small. But if this is it, it's okay. I went into the hospital. Doctor said, is there anything you want to know? And I said, no, it's between you and God now. And I'll tell you, the miracle of that, actually just surrender, total surrender, was that I used to bite my nails where they just bled. And just I'd have to go to the doctor and have them surgically treated. I've never bitten my nails since. And that's kind of my little miracle story on the side, my side miracle story and everything. But I've watched NA grow. It's been a tremendous thing to watch it grow because I don't think any of us thought it was going to do what it did. I know I didn't. We were just concerned about an addict suffering. They want help. It didn't matter who you were, where you came from, race, creed, color, religion, or lack of religion. And I hate to hear things about derisive. Is that the word, derisive?
Derisive.
I was debating between the two. Derisiveness in NA, because we all are the same. We all have the same problem. We didn't get here the same exactly. We weren't brought up the same exactly. We have different personalities. We have different things. But we all have the disease. And that's what we should, or I should keep paramount. I can't tell anybody else what to do. I have to keep paramount, is that we all have a place here. And it's my job to make sure that you have a chair. I don't get out much to meetings anymore. I can't drive at night, but I do my little bit at home. I've got two recovering alcoholics around me, addict alcoholics, in next door on both sides, and they're pounding on my door pretty regularly. And I've decided that I'm going to work in preventative. And I've got a bunch of kids where I live, and nobody has time for them, so they hang out at my house. And I've got them from 2 years old knocking on my door to 18. And the neighbors come to me and they say, can you go quiet those kids down? And so I'll get the kids off to the side. And we have a good communication and it's kind of fun and I feel like I'm doing something beneficial. And but all I know is I love NA. I love the people in NA. NA's afforded me things that I never thought I could, and I'm not talking about material things. I came here in a Cadillac. I drive an 88 Toyota with 2,000 miles now. So if you're looking for money, property, and prestige, you might get it, you might not. And you might have it, and you might lose it, because I've lost a few times. It's not, that's not what is important. It's what you're doing to you, for you on the inside. What's happening in here? What's your heart condition? Now, does it need a little work? Probably. I still do. My heart condition gets a little mean-spirited once in a while. Yeah. But I can't thank the people that are here before me enough. I had nowhere to go. I had no one to turn to. My family was not a family you could go home to with problems. It was not a family you could ask questions and get an answer. You could get ridiculed, but you couldn't get an answer. You know, so I learned early you couldn't go to them. But I could go to people. Jean was my first sponsor. And then this gal, Mary, in that other program. And he heard my first inventory, which was bad. You know, it was all the things that I thought were really bad. Because when they said a searching and fearless moral inventory, all I knew about morality was sex. That was the only the definition of moral that I knew. I didn't know it was immoral if they gave me, overchanged me at the store to keep it. I hadn't learned those things yet. I knew which fork to use if they laid 10 of them out. But I didn't know those fine things that make you a human being. And NA has given me that. It's afforded me a life that's been really an experience. And the last couple years, 10 years, I've learned that I can do things. I've been alone since 1989, and I'm terrified to be alone. I'm afraid somebody's going to come in the window. So we have a barricade under it, you know. And I've done that, and I feel like such a grown-up, you know. But I couldn't have done that without this program for 10 years. I couldn't have done it. It took me a long time to get to that point. But this NA and the struggles we went through, the infighting, because we've all had our infightings with one or the other. But you know what? We all worked for NA, so if you get to that point where you're not getting along with so-and-so or whatever, just remember your primary purpose is here to help the addict that still suffers. It's not the personality. And it's hard sometimes not to get caught up in that. I still have to check myself, put myself in check. I work in the county jail, and I love that. Took the message in there every day. And I had a wonderful time, and some people got clean. And that's, you know, that's really neat to see that flowering. So hopefully all of you will carry this on for another 50 years, because I'm not going to be here. And those of you that are younger will be here, and somebody will be listening to you. And the history will continue, the history of sobriety. Because there was no way else in the world that addicts had a chance at that time, didn't they? And don't fight for this program. When you go places, treat this place as well. We weren't always welcome anywhere, everywhere. We were taught in the beginning that, oh, they're going to let us use this place. Well, we got to polish the floor when we leave. Because we wanted to be invited back. We didn't always get invited. Period. Yeah. And I was broken up. I heard that somebody had graffitied a wall at a convention in a hotel. Now, I was just, that hurt. Because we worked hard to get a little room that would let us have a meeting. They didn't want addicts around. The attitude of society in those days was line them up and shoot them. And it wasn't something you wore, you know, look, world, I'm an addict, you know. You just didn't do that. So some things are a little easier today. But don't take it for granted. Please, don't take it for granted. Protect. And I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to be here, for inviting me to be here. I don't get invited much because I'm usually rather controversial at times. So I really appreciate this. I tend to say things that other people like to say a lot of times. But that's all right. I really appreciate being invited. It feels good. Thank you.
Thank you.